"Look, it's empty," she exclaimed, pointing to the passing bus. One bus after another went by. All were empty except for one or two white passengers. It was the same all over the city. The bus boycott was working. For the first time, American black people had united to protest against the unfair way they were being treated. Even though some of them had to walk long distances, the black people refused to use the buses. The leaders of the bus boycott held a meeting. They decided to call themselves the MIA, the Montgomery Improvement Association. Martin was elected president. They also decided that the bus boycott would go on until the owners of the bus company changed their unfair rules. The bus boycott would cost the owners a lot of money. That same evening, thousands of black people attended a meeting called by the MIA. Martin, as president, was to be the main speaker. He had little time to prepare for it. Newspaper reporters and television cameras would be there. He felt nervous. He was not sure what he would say. He decided to pray for guidance. "Lord, calm me down. Be with me now when I need your help more than ever. Help me to say the right things." God answered Martin's prayer. After thousands of people had sung the hymn, "Onward, Christian Soldiers," prayed, and heard a reading from the Bible, Martin spoke. He told the story of Mrs. Parks. He listed some of the ways in which black people were suffering. Then he said, "We're here this evening to say to those who have treated us wrong for so long, we're tired. Tired of being kept apart. Tired of being shamed. Tired of being kicked about." Everyone cheered. "We have to protest," continued Martin. "We've been patient, but we've come here tonight to be saved from that patience that makes us patient with anything less than freedom and fairness." Everyone clapped. "But," went on Martin, "we must not be violent. Don't force people not to ride in the buses. Our actions must be guided by our Christian faith. Remember the words of Jesus: love your enemies, bless them that curse you, pray for them that use you badly." Everyone clapped and cheered. The bus boycott went on. This was how Martin began trying to get better conditions for black people in the United States. It became known as the Civil Rights Movement. In the middle of one night, Martin was wakened by the telephone ringing. He got up and picked up the receiver. "Listen, nigger," yelled an angry voice. "We've taken all we want from you. Before next week, you'll be sorry you ever came to Montgomery." It was just one of the many horrible telephone calls that Martin and his wife received. He felt he simply could not take any more. With his head in his hands, Martin prayed aloud to God. "Lord, I'm taking a stand for what I believe is right, but I've had enough. I just can't face it alone anymore." At that moment, Martin sensed that God was with him. He could not explain it. He could only feel it. Inside his mind, a voice was saying, "Stand up for what's right. Stand up for truth. God will be at your side forever." It was strange, but so real. Martin got up, sure that God would give him the courage to go on. He was ready to face anything now. In the days that followed, Martin had to face many difficult times. Many threatening telephone calls were made to him. Terrible letters came by every post. One read, "This isn't a threat, but a promise. Your head will be blown off, sure as Christ made green apples." One evening, Martin was speaking at a meeting. Suddenly, he noticed that some people were rushing about, looking worried. "What's happened?" he asked a friend. His friend Ralph did not answer. "Ralph, you must tell me," said Martin. "Your house has been bombed." Martin thought of his wife and young baby. "Are Coretta and the baby all right?" "We're checking on that now. We think so." His family was indeed safe, but part of the house was badly damaged. Someone had thrown a bomb into the porch. The porch had been split into two. Windows had been blown into the rooms. Broken glass covered the floors. Light bulbs were smashed. The place was a real mess. Martin rushed over to his wife. "Thank God you and the baby are all right," he said. Groups of black people, angry at the bombing of their leader's home, were gathering outside. Many carried guns. Policemen were stopping people getting too near Martin's wrecked house. A policeman held one black man who yelled, "You got your gun? I got mine. Let's shoot it out." Black boys were armed with broken bottles. Some of the older black people started insulting the police. They yelled and booed. The police began to threaten the black crowd. Trouble could have flared up at any moment. Martin went out to talk to them all. When they saw him, everyone went quiet. In a calm voice, he said, "My wife and my baby are all right. I want you to go home and put down your weapons." One black man shouted out, "All right, Reverend, if you say so, but I still think we ought to kill a few of them." "We can't solve anything by violence," Martin went on. We must meet hate with love. Remember, if I am stopped, this movement will not stop, for God is with this movement." After that, the crowd began to thin out. People went back to their homes. A white policeman was heard to mutter, "If it hadn't been for that nigger preacher, we'd all be dead." Success and suffering. The bus boycott went on for over a year. Then, at the end of 1956, the United States Supreme Court made a decision. Keeping black people and white people apart on buses was against the law of the country. Black people were, of course, very happy at the decision. The bus boycott was called off. Most white people accepted the change. Some, however, were very angry. A few even promised that black people's blood would run in the streets if they tried to sit in the front seats of buses. One letter to Martin threatened that 50 black people's houses would be burnt down, including his, if any black person sat near white passengers. On some nights, buses were stoned. Black people were dragged off buses and beaten up. One woman who was expecting a baby was shot in the leg. Several black people's churches and the homes of two of Martin's friends were bombed. A pile of 14 sticks of dynamite was found just in time on the doorstep of Martin's home. However, despite all this, the bus boycott had been a success. Black people now had the law on their side. So in 1957, Martin and others began to protest for other rights. They wanted black people to be treated as equals at all times and in all places. On the 17th of May, 37,000 people, black and white, took part in a freedom march in Washington. Martin spoke to the huge crowd. He demanded that every black person, like every white one, should have the right to vote. At that time, each person who wanted to vote had to pass a test. They had to read a few sentences from a book and then explain what they had read. It was then up to the person testing them to pass or fail them. This was really a crafty way of stopping most black people from being able to vote. Many of them had not been given a good education, and in any case, the test was often not fairly done. The right to vote was what Martin wanted to fight for next. On one day, the following year, Martin was standing in a corridor outside a courtroom when a policeman came up to him. "Move away from here. Move on." "I'm waiting to see my lawyer," replied Martin. "If you don't get the hell out of here, you're going to need a lawyer," snarled the policeman. "I'm doing no harm. I'm breaking no law. I'm waiting to see my lawyer. He won't be long." "Boy, you done it now," shouted the policeman angrily. Another policeman came over. The two of them grabbed Martin, twisted his arms behind his back, and pushed him down some stairs. Martin was kicked and beaten up. He was charged with not obeying a policeman. 2 weeks later, he was in court. He was found guilty and given the choice of paying a fine of $10 or going to prison for 14 days. "Your Honour," said Martin, "I cannot pay a fine for an act that I did not do. I was about to go into a courtroom when two policemen pushed, twisted, choked and kicked me. I did nothing to deserve being treated like that." The black man can no longer silently suffer cruelty from the police. We cannot do so because of what we read in the Bible. We are commanded to resist evil by the God who made us all.